Welcome to episode 25. I can't believe we're there already. Episode 25 of the You Understood podcast. I'm delighted to invite guests Sophia and Richard Yarrow to the studio. Welcome.
Thanks, Paul.
I always like to offer the guests the chance to introduce themselves because you guys can do that better than I can. So if we can start with Sophia, that would be great.
Okay, hi, I'm Sophia Yarrow. I'm 32 and I live in East Lothian.
Fantastic. We'll get into the why in a second. Richard? Okay.
Hi, I'm Richard Yarrow and you're not 32, you're only 31.
you're getting ahead of yourself.
I'm 30.
Yeah,
and I'm married to Sophia. And we run the Yarrow Cookery School, which is
fantastic.
Our business.
Amazing. So I guess the reason we got chatting and the connection between a cookery school and You Understood is because when we spoke, I felt that you had really different values and ethos around cooking. And we'll get into the relationship with food later. But can you give us a kind of a background story as to why you started the school? What was the reason for it and where it came from?
Yeah, no, I can. So it all really started. I was private chefing. Sophia was actually running a yoga and massage and aromatherapy business. And I was private chefing in the Highlands. And in one of the jobs in particular, there was a family that had kids and they were like, oh, our kids like cooking. So I said, oh, you're more than welcome to come and help. You know, the kids are more than welcome to help. And in that week, a few of the kids decided to pretty much sacrifice their whole holiday to help cook with me. And I realized at that moment I was getting so much more satisfaction from teaching them knife skills, teaching them recipes, and seeing how much they were improving from just a week of cooking with me than I was from sort of the private chefing side of things. So at that point, I was like, that's what I want to do. I just want to teach people how to cook.
Kind of like a penny drop moment.
Yeah. And then what was great is that Sophia was already running her own business. So she sort of understood how to create a website and was very sort of enthusiastic and encouraging about it. And So she then said, look, I'll create your website and, you know, we can work together. And sort of from that moment, we've sort of run the business together and she created the website and leads all the marketing side of things and all the tech. And then I do most of the teaching.
A marriage made in heaven.
Wow. Yeah.
A marriage made in heaven.
Yeah.
So how do you go then from this is it, I've realized what it is I want to do to, okay, you know, bring the pieces of the puzzle together. What does it look like? How do we do it? You know, all of the stuff that I guess creates the brand personality. So beyond the idea and the concept, how did you get to where you are today in terms of your approach? Was that an iterative process?
Yeah, I think we were in a way really lucky that lockdown happened because it meant that we were forced to start online. So everything was pretty easy and cheaper to set up. So for example, all our first classes were online cookery classes, and it was basically me creating what I thought at the time looked great, looking back, maybe not, a poster, and WhatsApping it out to all our family and friends. And I think that's really nice to think back that the connections that we had, that was our first point of call, was who can we look to trial this, to see if this is a good idea. And realizing that there were loads of people out there who would support us and give us a go. And luckily through that, through our just firsthand connections, we managed to trial online classes and they went really well. And from that experience, everything changes. You'll know lockdown was either on or off. And then we had to adapt and adjust and just keep using our network of people to reach out at different points when we'd got to our learning capacity to be like, okay, now we need to develop the website beyond what it is. Now we need to really understand how to do proper marketing. Where can we get business help for free? Who can we reach out to? And we are extremely lucky that just, I think through luck really, that we managed to find different people to help us and different government platforms to help us as well. Do you agree with that, Richard?
Yeah, I think another point to make was like we were quite lucky compared to like the big cookery schools because we were just starting up. We taught maybe a couple of classes in person, like one-on-one because of COVID restrictions. And then Sophia had a tripod and a webcam for teaching yoga online. So I was like, right, I'm going to borrow that. And, you know, we sort of had first mover advantage because of the big cookery schools were a lot slower to catch on to the online side of things. And also, you know, it was great for everyone because people, obviously everyone had their own experiences in lockdown, but people were wanting things to do. Everyone was sick of quizzes. So even from the very beginning, like, it was really helping people's mental health because, you know, it was really engaging and it was a fun activity that everyone could do, bringing lots of people together, whether it was corporate team building or like Christmas family events. So, you know, it was really enjoyable. And, you know, so it was a good start, really.
So you talked about that first moment with the children who sacrificed, I love that, sacrificed their holiday to cook with you and that experience. I think there's, and this is just my view, doesn't make it right or wrong, but there's a clear detachment generally, I think, between food and people. And I think when we first had a conversation, bringing people together to do something like cook and that kind of experience, that experiential feeling from everyone creates those social networks. So I guess it applies to everyone is my point. But how do you bring people who are detached? And I've got to hold my hands up, right, and say there's probably a lot more that I need to do to get in and involved. And I recognize that. But again, you kind of revert back to busy lives, right? Oh, I haven't got time. So part of this is education, isn't it? Part of this is trying to encourage people with the first steps and then allow them to grab hold of something and run with it and go as far as they want with it, right?
Yeah, I think what's really nice actually about cooking is that still generally people hold on to the sanctity that now, once I've made this meal, I'll put my phone away. And that in this day and age is really rare. And the more we can hold on to that and encourage that with children, and not just when we're eating, but the creation part. And that's where having an inbuilt learn to cook and not having to necessarily always follow a recipe or your phone recipe, to just cook from knowledge and be in the kitchen and be in the moment and engage in all the senses, which cooking does. And as soon as you start to create something, that's an amazing reaction that's happening in your brain. And that is so important for mental health. It's so underrated, the creation aspect of cooking and the meditation that immediately comes from that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we're so keen to spread the word on and encourage not just our daughters, but all kids and adults too, to sort of step into the kitchen, put the phone away, which I say most people are actually still quite good at, which makes our job easier.
Yeah.
But that's not to be lost, that meditative concentration aspect.
When anything requires kind of full attention,
yeah,
it helps to kind of dissipate the noise that's around your head, doesn't it? So it is important. I'm assuming that when you've got people in your classes, you can actually see them come to life. You know, your experience of that must be really rewarding.
Yeah, I think especially with kids, I think, because, you know, when we do our kids' weeks, they, you know, can quite often arrive and they're overexcited, but then, or they don't want to, on the first few days, do any washing up or tidying. But like seeing that development of like teaching them, okay, you've got to clean when you cook, and just, you know, once they start having the confidence to be like, start following the recipe and cooking the dishes themselves, rather than always being like, what do I do next? Right. Like, it's great seeing that, or their initiative, or, you know, just all the little tips that you give them, whether that's right, carry your chopping board sensibly over to your pan and put all your vegetables on the side of the chopping board so it's easier to brush them into the pan so you're not spilling it on the floor. Just when you see them pick up all the little tips that you're trying to give them to make life easier for them and their cooking like experience easier, you know, is great.
And those are skills for life, right? If you can embed them early on, they carry them with them throughout their entire life.
100%. Oh, yeah. And I think we all know in Scotland we need to do more cooking from scratch than probably the whole Western world, because, you know, it's so easy to order a takeaway from your phone. Often it might be sort of a similar cost now with the cost of raw ingredients. So, you know, we just want to keep encouraging people. And we've taught in schools and genuinely kids have been like, you know, haven't seen a raw carrot or a raw onion before, you know, not knowing what these ingredients
are. You can't believe it's actually still the case.
That's shocking, yeah.
So, yeah, I think...
And that's just around the corner from us.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to be done, but it's good that we can try and do a bit of good.
So in terms of the cuisine itself, are you focused on particular genres? Are you championing kind of Scotland or East Lothian, where I know we're all from? Have you got a particular destination there or an ambition, or are you open to creativity in anything, really?
I think at the heart of what we do, it's got to be, you know, Scottish food. So we do things like local Scottish seafood, or we do a venison Wellington class where we use roe deer venison that's come from East Lothian, and there's, you know, fantastic growing capabilities in East Lothian. So there's the humble potato is everywhere, and red cabbage and celeriac. There's great produce in East Lothian. We love to forage elderflower as well. And obviously wild garlic season soon approaching.
Which everyone loves.
But we do.
The smell of it's fantastic. Yeah,
but at the same time, we respect that, like, you know, we want to hit the market of what people want to learn. And so right now, things like Korean food's trending, or, you know, everyone loves Mexican food. So we still like to offer those public classes to maybe Scottish people wanting a date night to come in the evening to do like a tequila and tacos class, or, you know, so we do homemade pasta making. But again, we always want to be using as much local, sustainable, seasonal produce, even within those classes. So if it's saying to use, you know, a Korean or an Asian type of, say, radish, we might just use a British radish instead for the pickling, you know, vegetables rather than just, yeah. So it's getting a balance. So using as much local produce, but yes, we do some, you know, more exotic.
And in terms of your own journey, are you still, is it a lifelong kind of learning curve for you, or do you have kind of most of it down now? You can, you know, somebody can throw something at you and you can just go and produce it. How do you feel? Like,
I think we're both growing a lot and learning a lot. So I'll start with the food, and as far you could talk about maybe the tech side of things. For me, I think food's always changing and always sort of getting better. So for example, I had like a katsu curry recipe that I really liked 3 years ago, and then I make it again now and I'm like, I need to elevate this. So I'm always looking to improve, and different foods start trending, so different people, the markets for different stuff, you know now it's all about like kombucha and kimchi and all this sort of stuff, which is great. So you're trying to keep up to date with what people are wanting, and you know, now it is a lot more about, yes, now and then eat some nice meat, but we're all trying to push sort of bit more plant-based cooking and using more vegetables, because it's ultimately better for us and better for the planet. So far,
yeah, I think that's right. It's not very exciting to be in a business where you're not learning. So, you know, hopefully we know enough, but you know, it's so important to keep learning and growing, and we're always trying to push each other. Obviously with young kids it's harder, but for Richard to go off and do more culinary training, and for me to go off and do some sort of, you know, tech training, whatever that
constantly
involves.
Developing.
Yeah, it's just exciting, isn't it?
Don't I'm go sure, too far down you know, the rabbit hole with tech, honestly.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you can get yourself in a real pickle.
You can,
but
you absolutely can.
Again, I really enjoy it, and it's that engaged, you know, moment, and that's, you know, that's why we love what we're doing. So I want to keep learning and growing and making it better.
I love that. And I'm guessing you're kind of taking the feedback loop from everyone that attends and engages with you anyway, and then adjusting based on that, right?
Yeah.
So what can people expect if they get in touch with you? So you talked about the ever-changing face of food and the trends and the kind of foundational stuff. Can people just reach out and, excuse me, can people just reach out and ask for anything, or do you have to kind of look for the one that's most applicable for you in terms of dates and schedules? How does it work, and what can people expect?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people can always ring us up and ask anything, or walk in and have a coffee with us. We're pretty open to all, want to encourage that. But we have a schedule on our website, and you can book classes and courses.
Yeah.
But then you can also book private classes.
And I think
as well.
The way we've ran it until now is kind of, it was, we would give an idea of, say, 15 different classes that we like to teach.
Yep.
So that would be your beef Wellington, your Scottish seafood, you know, your Ottolenghi's, and homemade pasta class. So it'd be a various list, sort of trying to cover lots of different cuisines, especially if it's sort of a British person wanting a family experience. If it's an American tourist coming over, for example, we're then pushing out more Scottish stuff because that's what they want to learn.
Right, so okay.
Your haggis bonbons and your whiskey sauce and that sort of thing. But we, you know, I always say on an email, if it's a private inquiry, you know, please, you know, if there's something you really want to learn, please let us know and we'll, you know, we'll do our best to accommodate it. So actually...
Yeah, or we'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
With, yeah, I think the best starting point's the website where you can sort of see everything that's bookable.
Yep.
And then just always get in touch. We're pretty open door. We'd never want to not be so.
So in terms of the supply chain then, again, I imagine this is ever changing as well. But to just talk to us about how important that is to what you're doing. You know, how important is it for you to kind of intimately know your suppliers and their own values as they come together and ultimately help you produce the experience for your customers?
Yeah, I mean, that's really important. Richard knows more about this than me because he sort of
sources
everything.
No, I think it's there's lots of good local suppliers in East Lothian. We're going to try and improve things since when we've been running from our house, it's been more me driving to local veg shops and, you know, butchers and stuff. But now we've got this sort of business premises and we're going to be teaching at a larger capacity and more regularly. You know, it's something I need to do in the next couple of months is improve sort of how these systems are all going to work in terms of what you have just as stock. What you're getting delivered sort of freshly on the day, what can be delivered day or two in advance. So these are systems we do need to improve, but you know, there's so many great local suppliers. So, you know, we want to work with as much of them as possible.
And do you have a kind of a predetermined checklist that you go through at the moment? Or again, are you refining that as you go? Because I know you're early on in the journey, right? But are there things that, you know, suppliers particularly have to tick the checkbox on to be part of your thinking? Or are you not there yet there?
I think we basically know, because obviously East Lothian and Scotland as a whole is quite a small place.
Yes.
We sort of know, you know, for example, Fantasy Farm are doing fantastic things.
Yep.
You know, that it's pretty easy to know who it is you're dealing with. And when it comes to the meat, Richard has great contacts with local gamekeepers and butchers. And so it's not that we're asking them like, oh, you must do this to do. We just know where the best places are.
And that's inherent knowledge, right?
I think it
right?
probably comes from Richard's time, like in restaurants, but traveling around the Highlands because all these different places, I think you got to learn what was good practice and what wasn't. And I think you sort of brought that back here. That's sort of my understanding of your sourcing journey, which hopefully people will start to bring stuff to us now.
Yeah. Because I guess you're in a position of great influence, right? Influence in terms of the right behaviours on the relationships with food, influence in terms of taking the ability to produce something and that ethereal feeling back home or to their friends or their extended family. So you are in a great position of positive influence. And I think that education piece is probably as critical as the experiential piece.
Oh, definitely. And I think people really care about it as well.
Yeah,
now we're seeing that, like, a lot of people ask us where things have come from, why we've chosen it to be there.
And
I think that the more we can be transparent about that, the better. And as Richard said, hopefully we'll have really clear-cut systems, so that's all really easy. I'd love to have a map of Scotland, and we've got, like, this is where we get this from, but because of seasonality, it's really tricky because it changes all the time. So... that's the sort of trickiness about it, isn't it?
In terms of the offerings then, so touch upon some of these different offerings, you know, how that's forming in your mind in terms of the schedule. So you talked about, you know, food-related offerings. You talked about the people, so young people. I love the concept. Maybe we could edit it this bit out for my wife, but I love the concept of date nights as well.
Oh, yeah, that's good. So, we've now got a bar on site, which is new for us.
And you've got a bar on site? Okay,
so that's a big new thing where we've always done things like cocktails and canapes, but now there's like a dedicated space where at any point you could be like, okay, I'm just going to go over to the bar, order another drink, and it just creates that added element of relaxation. Yeah. And like, it's not meant to be this high pressured, you know, school vibe. It's a relaxed place where people are coming ultimately to have a good time and learn skills that are going to make their life better. So we don't want anyone to feel nervous or, so hopefully the bar helps, whether we don't actually drink, but whether you're having an alcoholic drink or not, it just takes that sort of edge off things, hopefully.
I remember, oh, sorry, go ahead, Rich.
I was just coming back to like the offerings. Like, we've got sort of four main offerings, which is like, you know, local people wanting to come for a nice experience, whether that's essentially to book on a public class, but they can, again, organize a private stuff with their friends and family. So that's just sort of local adults, let's say. Then you've got kids, again, so that's going to be probably generally Scottish kids. You know, we've had people come from sort of like Perthshire down to do kids classes, and actually
one
far side of Glasgow.
From miles away, do you remember?
Yeah, there's been, so it's sort of kids really around Scotland, because there unfortunately isn't that many cookery schools around, or maybe it's fortunately, but in a way, you know, we want people to learn how to cook. So as you've got your kids, and that's teen, and we're doing off to uni, and we're also running a ski week as well, which we want to be a big success. So that's training you up to be to go do a ski season.
And Richard actually did that. He's just, you know, reminiscing on good old days.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's
before the days of kids, which is good. And then the two others are tourists. So, you know, we're very privileged in Scotland that, you know, people are realizing it's an amazing place to visit Scotland. Safar sort of works closely with them. So it's trying to get, a significant amount of them are American tourists, but, you know, tourists from all over the world coming to Edinburgh, coming to East Lothian, and then cooking with sort of local Scottish produce. And then the final market, which is quite a fun market, is the kind of corporate team building days. So getting sort of some companies in Edinburgh coming down to do team building. So they're kind of our four main. So it's
I love that. I love that last one, especially, you know, that's a really good way. And I don't think a lot of organizations are maximizing the potential there in terms of teamwork and collaboration and challenges.
Yeah, that's right.
So are you in charge of taking that to market and going and having those conversations, I suppose?
Yeah, trying to work out different ways to approach different companies. Sort of had two things, like a very serious document and then like a really fun one, just see what lands.
Go with the fun one, with the fun one.
What's great is we've got this huge central island, so coming back to the ethos of bringing people together for conversations and for it being about social well-being as well. Quite uniquely to our cookery school in the UK is this huge island, and everyone's cooking around that, and they've got their ovens and their induction hobs on that. Okay. So it was a bit of a feat to get it built, but I'm really glad that we did, because if you've got a team of 16 and they're all cooking and looking at each other and chatting, like, that is amazing. Yeah. And you can have little competitions, as you said, so who can make the best cocktail or whatever it is. So we're lucky to have that in the space, and that helps to bring that collaborative piece to the class, really.
I didn't do too much, as I alluded to, in my early life, right? And I think how that's manifested itself in my later life is that I'm pretty terrified of, you talked about kind of following recipes and stuff. I'm pretty terrified that, you know, if I'm a little bit off with that volume of ingredient, or, you know, I haven't got that one, I have to replace it with another one, that it's just going to be an absolute catastrophe. So there's a fear element is my point. And even like, for example, we were lucky enough to have a week away recently, and there was an Aga there, right? And absolutely terrifying, because it's not, again, it's like anything. Once you take somebody out of their comfort zone, whether it's the ingredients, whether it's the meal, whether it's the people, whether it's the machinery and the tools that they have, all of a sudden, they can either run towards it and get excited about the adventure that's about to happen, or if you're like me, run away from it and go, oh, I don't even want to start, because I've already made up my mind that it's going to be a catastrophe. So how do you kind of coach people through that fear?
Yeah, I mean, I think the examples you said there are very relatable for me, because I used to have to go to the Highlands and I didn't know what kitchen I'm going to be turning up to. And first, you're arriving at 4 p.m. and you've got to have dinner at the table at 7:30. And I learned from some of my earlier ones what to try and cook on the first day. So I normally ended up doing things like a risotto, because I knew I just needed a hob. I didn't need to know about the oven. So it's real it's a completely fair enough fear to be like, I don't know how to use an auger. I've never used one of these before. There's no temperature on it. Right. How, you know, so it's completely understandable. So I think, you know, ultimately, when I went to Ballymaloe Cookery School, one of the teachers used to be like, you used to say this line, which was just like, nobody's died. Do you know what I mean? It's not like, at the end of the day, we're not doctors here. We're just cooking. And I think it's a huge part of what we do is we're trying to take away the pretentiousness of cooking. It be, you know, there's a lot of content of people cooking amazing things. Yeah. And so for the average cook at home, they'll be like, well, I'm never going to make something look that good. So I just won't bother. I'll just get a takeaway. And I think for us, it's very much trying to get everyone back in the kitchen, regardless if you're a really top home cook, come along. But also if you don't actually know how to dice an onion, you know, come along too. You know, we're trying to get everyone involved. And ultimately, you know, we are lucky we all have our mobile phones. You know, I often do that. You know, there's an ingredient yesterday we didn't have. I Googled it for a substitute and then went with it and it seemed to work fine. So you can use your phone for Googling to try and find substitutes. And, you know, there's always that conversion from fan ovens to normal ovens. And then you're using Fahrenheit, centigrade. So we are lucky we do. You know, we've got to use tech when we can. And if that's going to help us be like, oh, well, can I substitute that? Or do I need this? So, you know, do use your phones, but ultimately try not to be too much of a perfectionist because it's probably still going to taste pretty good.
Well, the experimenting bit, I think to say that's okay, that's important, isn't it? So again, don't judge me and don't laugh, but I made my first hummus.
Nice. Right?
The other day, and I'd give it a kind of a 5 out of 10 when I tasted it, and I had to kind of replace a couple of things. But the point was, I was really still really proud after that. It sounds really stupid, but I was really proud because I just did it anyway.
And
that's the barrier that I need to get over, whether it's something really fancy or something really simple. I just don't start because of that fear of it not being an 8 or a 9 out of 10. So I think the more I do it, I guess like similar to a lot of things in life, but the more I do it, I think the more comfortable I'll be to just experiment, right?
100%. Yeah. And I think that's it. Like, you know, there is, unfortunately, we live in the Instagram world where everything looks amazing. That's so you're always going to be comparing yourself to that.
It is really, it is. Because, sorry to interrupt you, like 100 years ago, everyone would just, you'd go around to people's houses all the time. That was just normal. Whereas now there's definitely like an intimidation factor to that. Like we're always trying to host people and invite kids around for supper. That's sort of, that's normal to us. But we understand that because of sort of the pressure of technology or whatever it is, just culture has shifted out of that. And we just love it to just be a bit more relaxed and be like, great, I'm sure that hummus is lovely. Thanks so much for sharing it with me. You know, it's nice to see you, kind of, as opposed to like, oh gosh, that's not ready for a photo. Doesn't matter, the photo doesn't matter. What matters is that you've made something and you've shared it with someone.
See, but this is a really critical point, and I really want to emphasize this, because if you look at kind of mainstream media now with all the cookery programs, right? So yes, part of that is the errors and the mistakes that are being made, but actually my take on it is that, you know, you've got to be the best, right? It's got to be amazing. It's got to be perfect. So that message is kind of underlying, even though it's fun and it's social and there are mistakes in there and they don't shy away from them. And there are stories there. But actually, how you guys convey the experience of cooking and that it's okay to have a 5 out of 10 hummus, that is so important because it takes the edge off the Instagram stuff.
Yeah. Because why does that matter? It really doesn't matter.
Right, you know, exactly.
And I think that is a weird culture. I'm not a chef, which I hopefully people know. And when they come to classes, I have to say I'm not a chef, you know, just. But
I assume you do some cooking.
Yeah, I do a lot of like, I really like 1 or 2 pan things. Okay, I finish work. I like to get a nice meal for everyone done in a simple way.
Yeah.
And I think that's just fine. You know, that works well for our family on days where we're busy. But I can't remember what I was going to say.
Talking about chefs and just
this is a real culture.
Yeah,
isn't
there
it?
Is a culture. And I wouldn't, I would, you know, I'm trained as a chef, but I've not probably got a similar personality. I'm very much an extrovert. A lot of chefs are introvert, but they're, you know, a lot of chefs are kind of perfectionists, and I'm definitely not. So there's definitely, you know, I went and worked in a restaurant kitchen because I knew I needed that experience to get better.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is this real pressure of, oh, I can make that better than you. Mine can be more precise. And, you know, you know, I watch a lot of this stuff. And even as someone who is a good chef and a good baker, you know, I watch videos online when I'm trying to improve my cooking and I think, oh, they've made that look so easy. So even I sometimes think, gosh, you know, that's, you don't know how many takes they've done to get that video,
to get it online.
Yeah. It might have been their 15th attempt of making those perfectly, you know, perfectly formed croissants or whatever.
So, like, Richard used to come home from work from the restaurant, he'd have like a small break and he looked like a sort of broken version of himself.
Because again, crazy. it's like, what's the objective here, right? Is it to win a competition or back to your, you know, your core values? Yeah. Is it about creating social connection and and embracing that and encouraging it again? Because those are two very different things, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It is a hard balance because you ultimately, we're a professional entity. We want people to come and get better and create food that's better than what they would make at home. Otherwise, why are they coming? So it is getting the balance. But at the same time, if someone's never been able to cut an onion before or never made something as simple as like a bechamel sauce or something, they might plate up the dish and it might not look amazing, but they've gained amazing skills because they've learned how to make sort of basic mother sauce and they've learned how to dice vegetables properly. But that person on the other side of the table who's got 1,500 cookbooks and is constantly on Instagram, you also need to add value to them. So it is, it's a bit of a juggling act, but ultimately, you know, we have the confidence that, you know, I've had a lot of what I was called foodies come into cooking classes and you're suddenly like, right, I've got to impress. And, you know, I feel pretty confident that everyone comes to the class and they've taken away some good skills, you know, even if they think they're a good home cook. You know, luckily I've got enough experience now that I should be able to add value to
that. And that was going to be one of my questions in terms of different skill sets. So you're happy to kind of adjust the dial, if you like, based on where people are in their own journeys, right?
100%. And like a big part of when I attended a cookery school in the past, it was very demo orientated where you'd sit in the back of the class and watch from afar. Whereas I feel very strongly that it's all practical. So if there is a demo element, it will be on the big island and 2 minutes later, you will be trying to do it. And we will make sure we have enough trained chefs, me and others, around to help out so no one sort of goes under the radar and doesn't get the help that they need.
And our classes are never going to be huge, so that's really important that everyone feels listened to and, you know, they can ask a question at any time. They're not going to get
that
lost.
Intimacy helps, doesn't it? And as you say, kind of not feeling alone.
Yeah, and just getting to know people. Exactly. You know, one of the reasons I love the classes is you get to know some. When we've had our first daughter, a lot of our classes were run from our house.
Okay.
And so for me, that was quite a personal experience, really, because they're all coming, having this lovely time. I hear them all laughing with Richard, and then they're meeting me and the baby, you know, and I'll remember some of the characters, you know, for a long time, you know, probably forever. So you get to know people in a nice way when it's a small class, which you don't get if there are 30 people plus. So it'll always be sort of around that 14 to 20 max.
I love it. The difference between having a conversation and kind of seeing the messages on a static website, it's really hard to convey that passion and those values through the static website. I mean, you can do so much, right?
Yeah.
But you can't do it in an authentic way. So how about your engagement with people outside of the school itself? Have you got options or thinking around mid to long term access to knowledge bases or access to kind of demos online, or are you sort of keeping that parked for now and you want to keep it very, very much face to face at the moment?
I think we're not sure. We're always wanting to sort of think we're going to expand into that. And we've got a few really exciting collaborations in the pipeline. Maybe that's the way it will be. It's other people share. I'm not sure. I think it's so hard to know at this point. We've just got to get the new expansion underway and make that really fantastic so that everyone leaves and wants to be like, okay, I'm going to give them a 5-star review.
Yeah.
And then maybe in a few years' time, sort of address how we're going to grow our reach, because it's difficult, really. It's just the two of us. We do work with consultants, but apart from that, it's just the two of us.
Well, it's a world of options ahead of you, but you've got to just take it easy, right? And learn what works, what doesn't, what people respond to, what they don't.
That's right.
In terms of keeping people coming back, but also I'm thinking about behaviors again. So they come in, they have mm-hmm. a fantastic time. They've learned something new. They feel good. They go and tell their friends. Do you think that's enough to mm-hmm. hopefully start to change people's behavior around cooking? Or do you think there's probably an element of there needs to be saying. Several yeah. touch points before it becomes a behavior that's normal to them? What's your view
on
that?
I think yeah. you're definitely right there. It's sort of. It's how do we then reach that person over the next few years so they build up that inner confidence to just have cooking and sharing meals as being a sort of everyday part of their thinking. That's just, you know, I think you're right. One experience might not cut it. So how do we communicate? I don't know if you've got any ideas.
Well, I think, you know, hopefully once we're in this new space, it's our first actual like proper school rather than running it from our house or venues. That should hopefully legitimize us and give us a bigger voice, give us more reach.
Yep.
Who knows? We might, you know, today we're doing this podcast. Hopefully lots of people listen to this.
Yep.
But, you know, once we hopefully we'll continue to grow our influence and reach, and then we can continue to spread this positive message, which is cooking from scratch is fun. Cooking from scratch should be done by everyone and shouldn't be scary and is enjoyable and, you know, great for you. And I think, you know, I think it's really all about just trying to continue to grow the business in terms of reach. Right now, we've been given good advice from people from Visit Scotland saying, look, you've got two young kids. There's only the two of you. You're setting up
this new
venue.
Right? Be sensible, right?
Yeah. Focus on what the here and now is. And that is, right, we've got the venue. We need it now to sort the soft furnishings, get it all looking amazing for the guests to have a fantastic experience.
Yep.
We need to make sure that our classes are as good as they possibly can be for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be our focus, because we only get one chance of launching at the new venue. And so we need to make sure that all those people who come have an amazing time, and they should, hopefully. And then from that, it can all grow. But I think right now we just have to focus on the here and the now. It's like we finally got our space.
What is good is that people are having that. People know, even though they might not know, but your gut microbiome and all these things with things like Zoe, you know, everyone knows that these are good things to be doing and hopefully that's only going to continue. And if we can somehow be part of the conversation about the social element and the creative element and the fun, then that's, you know, it's how do we share that? But I think only time is going to be on our side.
100%, yeah.
So hopefully it will continue to get easier rather than harder.
So when is the space open? What's the current timeline?
April.
So yeah, soft launch is March. So doing a few trial classes, getting to know the space. We're doing one thing which should be really exciting. We're using a company in Edinburgh who focus on like videography.
Oh, nice.
And they're going to come in and do, they're called Nest Marketing.
It's a friend of Richard's, both of us now.
And so he's going to bring his team in and they're going to try and create kind of what we're missing from the website, give people a bit more of a feel.
Love that. Love
and
that.
Maybe get some drone shots as well of the East Lothian coastline as well, just to sort of, so people can
put us
see
on the map.
Yeah, put us on the map. So that's kind of what's happening in March. And then April is we're going to start with the kids week in April. And there's only a couple of spaces left for that, which is good.
Yeah, a few classes have sold out, which is great. That's but we good. Just got to keep, you know, keep making it sound great. And I think as soon as people come and hopefully have a good time, hopefully
you'll start to relax after that, I think, because you're leading up to that opening point, aren't you? So
yeah,
that's right.
I think it'll be fabulous. Okay, well, before we close, and I really want to thank you both for coming in, because for me, any excuse to get people together, and the vibe that I got from both of you today is really that keeping it real vibe, right? So yes, we can talk about cooking and yes, we can talk about fancy stuff, but the reality is there's you know, there's more to life, and this is just a part of that, right? But I always ask for a kind of a piece of advice for somebody like me who might be scared or might not know where to start, and thinking about the kind of social cohesion, the well-being, apart from coming along, and we'll put the links in the podcast and making contact with you guys. But apart from that, what would each of you say to somebody that might be listening to start their journey?
I'll go first. I think, you know, my real advice would actually be, and it might be counterintuitive, is like we live in the digital age and there's so much, you know, content out there to provide you with the skills you need, whether that's you want to make bread for the first time. There are loads of bread videos online. There's loads of content. So don't be afraid to use that, but do understand that, you know, your end product might not look quite as good right. as theirs. And just to relax and be like, it's still bread. It still tastes good. You haven't got all the chemicals that you would have in if you bought it from the supermarket. So, I mean, my main advice would be tap into the stuff that's already available. And yeah, don't worry too much if it's not perfect.
I think that's good advice. I'd agree with Richard and just push yourself out of your comfort zone. Just say, actually, I'm going to make a few simple things and invite some friends around and just see how you feel. And I'm willing to bet you're going to feel better than before your friends arrived, and then think, actually, I'm going to push myself to do that again in a few weeks' time. And I think that will, you know, that would be my main piece of advice, really.
Amazing. Right. Thank you so much again for making
Thanks
the effort
much,
to come in.
Paul.
I'm sure it'll be hugely valuable for the audience. And yeah, good luck with it all. People
Thanks.
Be in touch.
Yeah.
Thanks very
Anyone
much.
Is welcome anytime. Good.